Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and happy Veterans Day. Thank you to those of you who served. I wasn't going to go live tonight, but I decided I was looking through this article that was published on Mad in America that I really appreciated having the venue to attempt to get this out back in 2015. I'm sure that it's still going on. I had begun a series of Freedom of Information Act requests with the Veterans Administration around the use of electric shock treatments on veterans. I'm just going to read the article instead of prefacing it. Electroshocking Veterans and Their Fetuses by Lauren Penny, published November 24th, 2015 on Mad in America. I've long been concerned with the way society responds to people who come back from war. Veterans are routinely funneled into psychiatry's grasp. Over the decades, some people who fought in wars have shared with me their experiences of being psychiatrized upon return from war. Sometimes these experiences included veterans being stripped of their Second Amendment rights and a host of other constitutional, civil, and human rights violations as they began to be forced into complying with psychiatric regimens. And on several occasions, this included veterans being subjected to electric shock. When I would tell those in various forms of power what veterans had shared with me, the information of people's lived experiences, people's stories, simply dismissed as anecdotal and therefore justified these accounts in the master's minds as non-actionable intelligence that was of no consequence in a policy arena. Underscored here, the whole psychiatrization of the experiences of active members of the military and of veterans is part of the problem. The work of people like Paula Joan Kaplan to discredit psychiatry and create opportunities for veterans and people who work in the military to be listened to is essential. Jeez, this is hard. I'm not reading right now. Paula, of course, recently passed, and her work around discrediting psychiatry. Okay, I'm not going to talk, but it's her. Paula is missed. Okay. It's been a rough year, right? 2 years. So underscored, I'm reading again. Underscored here, the whole psychiatrization of the experience of active members of the military and of veterans is part of the problem. The work of people like Paula Joan Kaplan to discredit psychiatry and create opportunities for veterans and people who work in the military to be listened to is essential. However, if each individual story of forced psychiatric involvement and electroshock are considered just anecdotal by those in power, what would evidence of the routine practice of those encountering psychiatry through the Veterans Administration being electroshocked be? To see if I could answer this question, during the spring of 2015, I began a series of Freedom of Information Act FOIA exchanges with the Department of Veterans Affairs, Veterans Health Administration. Perhaps you will accept what I found through these FOIA decisions as evidence of the use of electric shock on veterans and those receiving services through VAMCs in the United States. The FOIA requests produced multiple documents. One report was from fiscal year 2009 in the form of a 16-page, quote, national and regional resource report in the, quote, draft pre-decisional stage. The draft report describes, quote, programs not mandated by the Uniformed Services Handbook, page one, and included a, quote, idiosyncratic mental health programs, end quote, in the draft pre-decisional report were several types of programs, including programs for, quote, specialized women's PTSD care, quote, military sexual trauma programs, and, quote, ECT services. This entry addresses, quote, ECT services. Here's what we know. In the draft pre-decisional report under the heading, quote, ECT use in the Veterans Health Administration, on page 4, there is clear and convincing evidence of widespread use of electroshock throughout the VA system. At least 5,009 electroshocks, electroconvulsive treatments, were used on at least 743 individuals through the VAMC network in 2009. 2, the report only addressed electroshock that was delivered to someone 2 or more times. 3, we have no information on how many times people were subject to electroshock once. 4, in 2008, there were at least 75 locations in the VAMC network across the United States that delivered electroshock. 5, the report only addresses electroshock delivered through the VAMC network. 6, the report confirms it does not include electroshock done in private or non-contracting VA institutions. 7, in 2009, the VAMC with the highest number of people electroshocked, 30 or more people, were San Juan, Omaha, North Chicago, Kansas City, and San Antonio. 8, only 15 of the 21 Veterans Integrated Service Networks, VISNs, across the country responded to the request that the report I was given addressed. 9, we can be sure that with any additional information, any amount of electroshock being conducted on those receiving services through a Veterans Administration Medical Center, a VIMC, reported would only increase the amount of people who were subjected to electroshock. 10, because of the lack of current information and perhaps misinformation, we have no idea of how many people have been or are currently being electroshocked. In addition to this information, multiple consent forms were sent to me, including a consent form for, quote, maintenance electroshock. I can say as a general statement that none of the consent forms sent adequately inform a reader of the known hazards of electroshock. A full analysis of these consent forms compared with the FDA guidelines, other known facts about electroshock, and informed consent process requirements in general is underway. The VHA Handbook 1160.01 from September 11, 2008, I received includes a campaign for the use of electroshock on veterans, a mandate for access to electroshock within every VISN, a mandate that electroshock be provided when a person is thought to meet the guidelines discussed below, and a mandate for, quote, maintenance electroshock on pages 31 to 32. The process for informed consent for electroshock is specific in Appendix A, quote, treatments and procedures requiring signature consent, pages A1 to A2. And specifies prior to, quote, number 9, electroconvulsive therapy on page A2, this note, quote, note, it is not necessary to obtain a separate signature consent for sedation, anesthesia, or blood products transfusion if the combined consent for the procedure already contains consent for sedation, anesthesia, or blood product transfusion, page H2. Waiving requirements for consent is a problematic in itself. The VA DOD Clinical Practice Guidelines for Management of Major Depressive Disorder, version 2.0, and published in 2008, makes it clear that, quote, somatic treatment strategies on page 59, such as, quote, electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, end quote, electroshock, should only be used with, quote, specific training and expertise in the management of treatment-resistant depression and the use of these devices, end quote, page 59. Nonetheless, in official recommendation, the VA DOD illustrated support of electroshock. Quote, A, electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, is a recommended treatment strategy for patients who have failed multiple other treatment strategies. On page 59. Also on page 59, B, electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, may be a first-line treatment for pregnant women patients with psychotic depression, catatonic patients, or patients who have severe self-neglect issues. Page 59. Yes, you read or heard that correctly. Pregnant women. And subsequently, the VA/DoD is supporting electroshock and anesthesia and a host of drugs for fetuses. The VA, Department of Defense, also instructs that, quote, number 8, patients who do not achieve remission after adequate trials of 3 different antidepressants should receive either augmentation with either medications or psychotherapy or receive combination antidepressant treatment or electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, on page 80. In fact, electroshock is a mandatory, electroshock is a modality to rid people of, quote, major depressive disorder, is prominent in the guidelines and listed as the first, quote, option under the title, quote, somatic treatment interventions on pages 130 to 132. The, quote, background of electroshock offered by VA, the Veterans Administration Department of Defense is, quote, electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, has advanced in terms of its importance in treating severe MDD, especially in its psychotic and treatment-resistant forms. Refinements in anesthetic, physiological monitoring, stimulus control, and neuromuscular blockade techniques are largely responsible for the advances and have contributed to ECT's improved safety profile. Page 130, end quote. This is a fraud. Whitaker and Cosgrove in 2015 point to the ways psychiatry dupes the general population when psychiatry is consented to, quote, without genuine informed consent. In 2015, page 158. This is something I have discussed and known is relevant and know is relevant to electroshock. Certainly, full informed consent and informed choice is most relevant to someone who receives a prescription for a course of brain-damaging electroshock, which under some circumstances is seen as torture. It is important that people have comprehensive and honest information about electroshock. Such authentic consent processes are not generally available. There is a pamphlet which I suggest people read called, quote, Entering the Gray Zone, to increase your knowledge about this brain-damaging procedure. When these Freedom of Information Act decisions show, what these Freedom of Information Act decisions show is that, A, there was a 2008 dictate supporting the use of electroshock throughout the VA system, and B, in 2009, there is evidence of nationwide usage of electroshock at VAMCs throughout the entire country. One last thing. This is not a problem of 2008, 2009. This is a problem of 2015 and beyond if some concrete actions to abolish the use of electroshock by VAMCs are not taken. It's 2021. A document of the VA Western New York Health Care System Center titled Memorandum 116A-9, February 24th, 2015, is evidence that at minimum in New York State, the pro-shock campaign persists in 2015. Quote, oh, I'm sorry, this is not a quote. The purpose of Memorandum 116A-9 is, quote, to establish guidelines and procedures for all staff in the application of electroconvulsive therapy at this medical center. Page 1. The policy of the VA Western New York Healthcare System is that, quote, ECT is an important therapeutic modality when utilized appropriately and shall be the treatment of choice for certain clinical entities. Page 1. The responsibility for carrying out ECT is, quote, the staff psychiatrist with designated ECT privileges. Page 1. Procedures, contraindications, consultation, pretreatment evaluation, informed consent, required credentials, ECT procedures for inpatients, and ECT procedures for outpatients are all addressed. For the purpose of understanding the breadth with which the VA Western New York healthcare system promotes ECT, quote, A, indications for use. There is currently no diagnosis that should automatically lead to treatment with ECT. Indications are based on a combination of factors, including the patient's diagnosis, nature and severity of symptomatology, treatment history, consideration of anticipated risks and benefits of viable treatment options, and patient preference, conditions for which ECT may be beneficial are 1, major depressive disorder, 2, bipolar disorder, 3, schizophrenia, 4, schizoaffective disorder. Page 1. Memorandum 116A-9 is up for review February 1st, 2018, according to page 5. Unclear as to what happens. The VA Western New York Healthcare System also sent me information including the, quote, equipment record, work orders completed on the device, and the PM procedure that is performed on the device every 6 months. August 19th, 2015. These documents and forms are also under analysis. Next steps. Will you stand with me in holding the VA accountable for the misinformation campaign it is producing and demand that the most recent data is made available for public scrutiny? This current entry was to publicly document the information I have been sent by Veterans Affairs by the Veterans Affairs, Veterans Health Administration, FOIA decisions. I see this documentation as just the beginning of a more orchestrated exposure of psychiatry and psychiatry in the military. I have plenty of information to continue going through and more to speak out from the FOIA requests. We do not have current data for how many people are being electroshocked through the VA, VHA, but we know at least 743 people were shocked at 75 different VAMCs, a total of in 2009, Office of Mental Health Services 2010. It is essential to keep in mind that these data only reflect people who were electroshocked 2 or more times, and 6 VISNs did not respond at all to the original query that was being reported on by the VA. There are untold number of people who were subjected to electroshock one time who are being electroshocked right now. Burstow's, Burstow's 2015, Psychiatry in the Business of Madness debunks the myth that electroshock stops suicide and unfortunately sheds light on the reality of its life-ending consequences. An important question we will ask is whether electroshock is contributing to the suicide rate amongst veterans. I'm proposing here a concentrated effort to obtain accurate and current data concerning the use of electroshock and other psychiatric procedures and products delivered through the VA, VHA, and VAMCs. If you would like to be involved with this unfunded effort as an advisor, this is still true, or to assist with conducting a literature review and designing a study or being a study coordinator and implementing what research design may come to if an institutional review board's approval to conduct the study, please contact me, 516-319-4295. Please leave comments and make suggestions for analysis and other information I ought to put up in follow-up FOIA requests to the Veterans Health Administration, such as whether electroshock is still supported as a, quote, first-line treatment for pregnant women by the VA, DOD, page 59, 2008. It's important to remember that it's not just that we are still in search of comprehensive data on the use of electroshock in the VA system. This issue of not having full and accurate data on electroshock is not specific to the VA. It is consistent with the horrendous reality that in the U.S., we do not have accurate numbers of how many fetuses, children, adults, and seniors are subject to electroshock. Yes, fetuses. I will remind you because electroshock is supported as a, quote, first-line treatment for pregnant women. VA DOD 2008, page 59. Please encourage people who are involved with the military or who are concerned about the ways that psychiatry conducts itself within the military to speak out and seek out supportive alternatives to psychiatry. Please be prepared to listen when people start talking. Electroshock has infiltrated the front lines. People who receive services through VAMCs are, at untold rates, subject to electroshock with a fraudulent consent process in the name of, quote, health. We all ought to be concerned about the relationship between psychiatry and the military. So I want to thank you for listening if you are here, and this will exist in the world for a bit. I'll be doing shows again in the near future. I guess maybe I should just mention that, you know, a lot's happened since then, right? So that was 2015. If we go back through the history of looking at some of this issue, at least what I've been writing about, you know, it was in June of 2015 that we looked at the ways that the Murphy Bill started to push the government control and ways in which forced psychiatry was going to be getting carried out at a federal level. And then in November of 2015 is when this article about electroshocking veterans and their fetuses was published. In 2016, the FDA pulled its trick to try to downgrade the electroshock device, which it did, from a class 3 device as an experimental device to a class 2 device specific for depression, where it's using the expansion of the use of electroshock for people who are diagnosed with like this medicalization of human experiences and this supposed depression has really firmly extended to people who are pregnant. And so there were several articles around that and continued articles around what was happening with the Murphy Bill and how it was in the process of coming through. So all the way through 2016, there were efforts to try to stop the downgrading of the shock devices. And of course, we lost that. And then, you know, 2016 happened. And but in May of 2020, I did in Mad in America, I did have an article published May 24th, 2020, as an electric shock update, and looked at I filed allegations of regulatory misconduct with the FDA against the New York State Office of Mental Health and Butler Retreat in Rhode Island, and any place else that's using this mislabeling and false advertising of electroshock. But one of the things that spurred this work was the Office of Mental Health supporting the use of electroshock on pregnant people. And so by 2018, what was being done on people in the military, that we had access of evidence in terms of giving electroshock to people who were pregnant, by 2020, the Office of Mental Health, really, I guess it was 2018, started in their brochures. They put forward, support for pregnant people, so the use of it. And so so here's the quote. The following advertising is from the OMH booklet on, quote, bipolar disorder, supporting the use of electric shock treatment when a person is pregnant. Quote, electroconvulsive therapy, ECT. ECT can provide relief for people with severe bipolar disorder who have not been able to recover with other treatments. Sometimes ECT is used for bipolar symptoms when other medical conditions, including pregnancy, make taking medications too risky. ECT may cause some short-term side effects, including confusion, disorientation, and memory loss. People with bipolar disorder should discuss possible benefits and risks of ECT with a qualified health professional. But there it was, that, you know, including pregnancy. Because the medications, you know, the drugs may be too risky. Most of the drugs are now, you're legally not allowed to take them when you're pregnant because of the known fetal damage. So why, the drugs are illegal for somebody who is pregnant, but electric shock, you know, causing a grand mal seizure. So like the process is 3 times a week for sometimes 2 or 3 months over a course of 12 weeks, where for 12 hours before the procedure, you can't eat. And then you're taking muscle relaxers and painkillers and anesthesia, which has an inherent risk of death, right? I died on the table from anesthesia. They had to revive me. Not for ECT, you know, for a procedure I was having, but just all the same. And the risks of dying from anesthesia are increased if you are overweight. And many people who have, like, quote-unquote, failed their medication attempts with antidepressants as the qualifier for, you know, electric shock have gained tremendous amounts of weight because the drugs, as Jim Gottstein's book on the Zyprexa papers showed, you know, alter the way that you process in the whole insulin system, your whole endocrine system. And so, I mean, we can go on for an hour about this. I guess that's how I used to do a show because I just realized I started a rant. But nobody is here to talk to, but maybe next time there will be. The guest call-in number is 914-205-5794. If you're ever listening in the future, 914-205-5794. That's the live guest call-in for future shows. If you want to be on a show, or if you're doing something, or you have a story that you want to have told, contact me, Lauren Tenney, at 516-319-4295. I should say that we're doing the conference, Aging in the World and the Movement. Very excited about that. We have a lot of people who have joined in, and it's unfortunately in response to, like, all of the loss that we're experiencing. And so, you know, every time we turn around, it seems another significant pillar of the human rights movement for people with psychiatric histories has passed away. And so we want to preserve the oral histories of those who are still with us while you're still with us, and celebrate and record contributions of those who have passed on from this life for the permanent historical record. I mean, just think about it in terms of this article. George Ebert, obviously one of my biggest influences in my entire life, who was a survivor of electric shock and coordinator of the Mental Patients Liberation Alliance, of how I got involved in all of this, passed away in January. Marianne, his wife, passed away just weeks before. Bonnie Burstow, who was mentioned in this article, passed away in January of 2019. George Ebert in 2020, Marianne Ebert in late 2019. Paula Kaplan just passed away. I don't even know when because I'm so traumatized by the loss of Paula, but her work also is clearly evident here and named. And so we're losing these few. So this conference, Aging in the Movement and in the World, if you don't know the works of these people, please look into them. And so as a human rights movement, we really want to start taking seriously about our later stages of life and the kinds of preparation and the information that we need as we get older, so our human rights are protected and promoted as we are prepared for these transitions. So Aging in the Movement and in the World is an online conference. It's free. To explore and surviving race, the intersection of disability and justice and human rights. is one of our co-organizing co-sponsors, and they've graciously allowed us to use their Zoom platform. So everything is going to be live and recorded, and we'll also be doing radio shows and things like that. So Aging in the Movement and in the World, it is an online conference to explore these pressing issues, and they are pressing. And we invite proposals for individual or group presentations and or panels, workshops, if you have pre-recorded materials, if you want to organize a networking caucus, all things that focus on preparing for later phases of life, including health and well-being, interacting with medical professionals, advanced directives, living wills, rights in nursing homes and other settings as a senior citizen, escaping forced psychiatry later in life, preparing and archiving personal papers, guardianship, death and dying, grief and bereavement, and any other ideas you may have to contribute to this conference, Aging in the Movement and in the World. We have so many co-sponsors, and I represent some of them individually, obviously, Talk with Penny, Mental American Monster, The Sprawl of American Psychiatry, the documentary that we're working on right now and in the process of pulling together, the historical documents of the Mental Patients Liberation Alliance, and then surviving groups who are organizing and helping to co-support this effort, Surviving Race, the Intersection of Injustice, Disability, and Human Rights, the Network Against Psychiatric Assault, the Mental Health Empowerment Project in New York State, the OPAL Project, oh, that's me too, NYAPRS, the New York Association of Psychosocial Rehabilitation Services, Psych Rights, the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, Intentional Peer Support, City Voices, the Newspaper for Peers in the Peer Workforce, Mind Freedom International, the Coalition to End Forced Psychiatric Drugging, NARPA, National Association of Rights Protection and the National Association of Rights Protection Advocacy, and you, if you want to be involved with it. There's a link to submit proposals and workshop ideas, and, you know, I don't know. It really was just at this point of where after Darby Penny passed away recently, I can't even deal with anything. This was the consequence of where it was like, how do we make sure that we hold on to the stories and the work and the contributions of people and create space so that the efforts that they made for decades are available to people. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Okay. Until next time, thanks for listening. Remember, you don't have to be mad to call in, but it helps.